is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's Tuesday, December 19th. This is the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings Live on VSiN and DraftKings Network alongside three-time Super Bowl winning executive and strategist Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonantoni with you. And I'm glad after hour one of the program, Michael, you're still with us. You're still around. No pitchforks and Eagles fans have gotten to the set today.
Oh,
you're doing okay?
Yeah, I'm good. Actually, I'm doing even better than good. I'm going to drive up to New York after the show, go see Billy Joel in concert at the Garden on the Residency. I mean, who's got it better than me, really, Stormy?
Nobody. There you go.
Nobody.
All right. Living large.
Yeah, there you go.
That'll be awesome. How long have you had that in the works?
For a while, you know, you got to catch this. You know, he plays once a month at the Garden. I've been wanting to go, and now seems like the perfect time to go with family and friends. So I'm looking forward to it. I've seen him many times before, but never in the Garden in this setting. I went to school at Hofstra University, which is in Long Island, which is near where he started his career out in Cold Spring Harbor. So I saw many shows when he was starting out because I'm that old, but this will be fun to watch. I've never seen him in the Garden. Seeing shows in the Garden is really different than anywhere else.
Just got a different feel. I feel that way about sporting events there too. Just being there for the moment it's awesome and it's special. It's elevated in a different way. But we got to get an artist that you like coming out here playing at the Sphere or something so that you can come visit us back in Vegas.
I would love that. Yeah, Springsteen's going to be out there in March this year, which is nice. Going to kick off the tour in March out there. So that'll
there
be good,
go.
But not the Sphere. The Sphere.
Well, come get some March Madness and come out here.
There's rumors Billy Joel will be playing because of the Dolan connection. He may be playing the Sphere.
There you
just
go.
Just rumors, though.
There you go. Well, you're always in the know. You've got a guy. You've always got a guy, and I love
gotta
that
have a guy,
you.
Stormy. Especially you got to have a ticket guy. Ticket guys are really important.
Well, unfortunately, the Eagles didn't have a guy yesterday they got stunned 20-17, and we talked about it a little bit earlier that in a lot of ways it felt more like the Eagles gave away this win then perhaps Seattle won it. But credit Drew Lock in a tough situation. Didn't even know he was going to be starting until essentially right before things got underway. And he delivered a 92-yard game-winning drive for Seattle to close this thing out.
Look, credits Drew Lock, and I'm happy. I love this post-game press conference, what he said, the way he congratulated his team. What a great teammate.
Yeah.
But for me, this game was Philadelphia had ample opportunity to take over the game, right? They were in control of the game. They're up 10-3 at halftime. Okay, so they give up a second half touchdown to start, but they answer right back like good teams typically do and get the 17-10 lead. And when they scored, the clock read 4:43 to go in the game in the third quarter. And how often have I said this? If you don't score in the fourth quarter, no matter how good of a team you are, just ask the Kansas City Chiefs. If you can't do that in the fourth, you can't get control of the game. You can't win these close games all the time. And the Eagles can't score in the fourth quarter. They turn the ball over. You know, they're not able to get – they got five first downs in the fourth quarter and no points. They went interception, punt, interception. That is really a recipe for losing. And look, let's face it. They haven't been able to throw the ball. Jalen Hurts threw for 143 yards in 31 attempts. Kept trying to throw the ball down the field. Why? I don't know. Longest pass play of the day was an 18-yarder to Dallas Goedert. Like, there's no explosive plays in their offense. And so and this is against a Seattle team that, you know, we watched Dallas make continual explosive plays. The Rams, you know, struggled to make them in the second game, winning 17-16. But still, this is not a great defensive team, missing rookie Weatherspoon, the starting corner, and Jamal Adams, one of their linebackers, who's called a safety.
Yeah, and I think that's an important conversation topic because we do talk so much throughout the course of this year about the Eagles' struggles on defense specifically, but their offense has not been what we've expected it to be either, especially over this now three-game losing streak where they have not exceeded 19 points in any of those losses. And so it's different. Jalen Hurts hasn't looked like himself, and I know yesterday he was obviously dealing with some bad flu-like symptoms that started on Thursday. He had to travel away from the team in order to get there because they weren't really sure what his status was ultimately going to be. He plays, credit him for gutting it out. But we even saw in the postgame press conference the way he was speaking, like he didn't look good. He was struggling yesterday. So there are a few things here where it's like, I wonder how much stock we can put in this game specifically, but then you have the four-game sample size, three-game sample size. We're like, no, these are issues that they've had, and I worry for them down the stretch here, Michael, even though they've got two games against the Giants and one against the Cardinals. Like, could they get tripped up again potentially, which is mind-boggling, I know, to think about given who this team is, but anything is possible. Now we can't pencil anything in the NFL.
Yeah, well, let's just look at it this way. Okay, last year, in when they had Shane Steichen and Hurts was really not one of the highest paid players in the league. He was working on his career. They had six games of over 300 yards passing. Six. They haven't had that. They've had two games all year. They've had two games all year in that category. They don't make. They're not. Their passing game has become a problem. And here's what happens. Is because he is a play-action pass quarterback, when it becomes a drop-back game, he feels the pressure, and he looks to run. His eye level is always on the rush. That's what play-action pass passers do. Fake the handoff, okay, I'm throwing it out here. But when there's no play-action, all of a sudden, what am I doing? Think of the last play on 3rd and 10. He's got a clean pocket. Vertically work the pocket up the field, what we call climb the ladder. And then look down the field for guys open. They'll be open. Mahomes does it all the time. Work that pocket. He takes it and he runs outside to the right immediately. Immediately, which now you have no offense. Now it's all loose plays. And if you do that, you know, now it's hard to complete passes. And he scrambles all the way back to the right and he throws it away to Gollett. That's why your offense isn't working, because he refuses to stay in the pocket. And I think what we've seen with Philadelphia, they have not played a dominating game. As I wrote about today in my column, they have not played, had a dominating win since they beat Tampa in week 3. They've had a lot of what I would call games where they are, you know, where they are basically not quite in control of the game. You know, they kind of have a little bit of control, but then they lose it at the end, and they've been where they can dictate how things are going to go in the game. But then, and then at the end of the game, they win it. But they've had a lot of these dangerous wins, too, which is where they're playing poorly and they find a way to win the games at the end. And they've had more dictating wins and dangerous wins than they've had dominating wins.
Yeah, the way that they have played to get to 10-4 at this point was not sustainable when they were on that run of being a 10-1 team. And can you elaborate a little bit more for our new audience? Why, from a handicapping perspective, the reasons why NFL teams win and how they win, why that's important for us as bettors?
Well, I think you have to be able to win games, to be a dominating team. You have to run the ball, throw the ball, stop the run, stop the pass when the other team knows you have to do it. That means you have the will to, you can exert your will over a team. Having a great drive in the first quarter is great. It's wonderful. But when the game is on the line, can you make plays? Can you win the game? Dominating teams can do that. Now, I throw the word dominating around as if there's a bunch of them. There's not a lot of dominating teams in the league. We know this, right? The 49ers have 11 wins. Of their 11 wins, 10 of them have been dominated because they're in control of the game all the time. They're in control of the game all the time. And if they have to run the ball, they can. If they have to throw it, they can. And same thing with Baltimore. And some of these teams, like the Chicago Bears, go back and look at the Bears. Watch the Bears play against the Cleveland Browns. And if you start to make the case, well, we should sign Justin Fields for next year, watch the second half of the game. Watch the whole game, because Schwartz blitzes them inside, doesn't let them run around. And then in the second half, when the Bears have declared what their game plan is, Schwartz adjusts out, and they can't move the ball at all. The second half for Fields was a disaster. And so that's when you were in control of the game. Like that Cleveland Brown game, and I didn't write about this, I should have. The Cleveland Brown Chicago game was the perfect example of a team that what I call a dictating win. And it was by Cleveland. Cleveland gave Chicago the 14 points. So they were making mistakes what let Chicago play in the game. The fans think Chicago should have won the game. No, if Chicago would have won the game, it was a dangerous win. They were going to give it away. They were going to give it away. They were never going to win that game if Flacco didn't give it away. And that proved out to be the case in the fourth quarter when they couldn't get a stop, nor could they get first downs when they needed. I mean, think about this. Their first down, they had three first downs in the fourth quarter. Here's their fourth quarter. Punt, punt, downs, punt, punt, punt. Their second half went punt, field goal, downs, punt, 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 interception. And in the second half, they ended up with six first downs.
the Bears becoming known for something you don't want to become known for, giving up those fourth quarter leads. Third time this season, they've had double digits in the fourth quarter, and they go on to lose the game straight up. Real quickly, last minute and a half, to go back to Seattle, their playoff chances have gone from 33%, according to ESPN analytics, up to 56% after the win yesterday. So essentially saving their opportunity, but in a logjam with four other teams at 7-7, yeah, sitting 500, trying to get a playoff spot. They're a -170 favorite to make the playoffs, +140 to miss. Which way do you lean?
Well, they always play Arizona well. They know how to play Kyler Murray well defensively. They got a Pittsburgh at home, which they should be able to win that, but it's always going to be tough for them. And then this week in Tennessee, they can get this 10 wins. Their problem is they lost twice to the Rams, so they lose that tiebreaker. And you've got to me, if you're betting Seattle, you got to think about the Rams schedule. Because for Seattle to get in, the Rams have to be 9-8, right? They got to be 9-8. If they're both 10-7, the Rams get in.
I have some remarkable stats for you here as we close out this segment. Pete Carroll, as a head coach in Seattle, as a dog at home, 23-9 straight up, 22-10 ATS. Monday Night Football under Carroll, 14-4 straight up, 11-6-1 against the spread. The only time Pete Carroll has ever lost to the Eagles was 24 years ago today in one of his last games as the head coach of the Patriots. Since he arrived in Seattle in 2010, played the Eagles for the first time as a Seahawks coach in 2011, beat Andy Reid once, Chip Kelly once, Doug Peterson five times, and now Nick Sirianni, 8-0 against the Eagles since joining Seattle. Wow. Crazy.
I wonder why the money was coming in on. He just has the Eagles' number.
Information I wish I would have known yesterday.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's the holiday season, and DraftKings is celebrating the only way they know how with some NBA action. This week, new customers can score $150 instantly in bonus bets just for betting $5 on basketball. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code VEGAS only on DraftKings Sportsbook. Again, use that code VEGAS, V-E-G-A-S. The crown is yours. Time for a little meaningless or meaningful, Michael Lombardi.
Ooh,
we're
going
to take a look at a couple of trends, a couple of streaks even. And I want you to determine whether or not for the game coming up this week in the NFL, whether or not this information is meaningful or meaningless. Starting with the ye olde Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys have won 9 straight games following a loss. They're on the road in Miami, taking on the Dolphins this week, getting 1.5 on the money line, +102, bet 100 to win 102. Do we think that that is meaningful or meaningless information?
I think it's meaningful. What it tells you is that the players have great concentration and focus after they lose, you know, and that's really important because winning is a habit, and so is losing. And when you lose, if you don't come back, if you just think, oh, we got this, we're going to come back and turn it around, which is what Pittsburgh's been doing, right? Oh, we got this, we'll turn it. No, you won't. No, you won't. So that tells you that they are listening, that McCarthy's got a chance to get them to play well and be in the game. Now, does that mean they're going to win? No. But I think they'll play way better. Now, we've got to figure out how many guys really had the flu? Is it an excuse? But I suspect they'll play much better in Miami against a very good Miami defense.
So the other wrinkle to this is we know how much the Cowboys have struggled on the road, too. In addition to, yes, you're dead on about all the illness stuff. We definitely need to try to comb through that a little bit more and find out who's dealing with issues. But Cowboys have been great at home. We know they're 7-0. The margin of victory is huge difference from the way that they are on the road, where they're 3-4. And this Dolphins team has only lost one game at home, and it was in incredible fashion, obviously, the way things transpired the last couple minutes against the Tennessee Titans. But they rebounded at home with a 30-point shutout win over the Jets. So I wonder how much like the home and road side of it comes into play as well, because Dallas has struggled so much there.
Well, I think Dallas' struggles on the road starts with their offensive line, right? Bad lines don't travel. Now, I'm not saying Dallas is a bad line, but if you watch them play against good teams on the road, Dak's under a lot of pressure. He doesn't have a clean pocket. I think go back to the Philadelphia game. We got first and five at the six, and all of a sudden they still can't block Hassan Riddick, and next thing you know, it's sack, and they're punting, and they got to go for it on fourth down. This line has to play at a higher level. Zach Martin needs to be in that line. He's got to play well for them too. He's hurt. He's nursing a chest or a quad. I'm not sure quite what it was. Initially, they thought it was a knee. Then they said it was an ankle. And maybe it's somewhere in between one of those body parts. I have no idea. But he needs to play, right? They think he'll play. He's going to rest him to Wednesday, probably rest him Thursday and get him to go. But they've got to block this front. If they can block the front, they'll have a chance to throw the ball effectively. But if they don't play better, this front will do some damage.
Yeah, he took a knee to the quad that forced him out of the game, at least this past week. And so, yes, as reported, they are hopeful that he's going to be able to go, but definitely something to monitor. How about the Browns and Texans this week? Browns getting 2.5 on the road in Houston. We know that C.J. Stroud is still in the concussion protocol as of now, has not been able to practice yet, total in that game 42.5. The Browns have lost 4 of their last 5 games against teams with a winning record. Meaningful or meaningless in this spot?
Very meaningful, because the Browns, one of the reasons I liked the Bears last week at a bad handicap is because I felt like the Bears defense could do what they did, which is sack the quarterback, because they're playing with they have no starting offensive linemen. So I was fully expecting the Bears defense to control the game, not allow them to run and create turnovers. They did. I wasn't expecting that the meltdown the Bears would have, especially in the fourth quarter or in the second half. This is a different game now. When the Browns go on the road, they're not as good defensively. We've seen this. We were Los Angeles, they're on the road. They weren't very good. They kind of got away from themselves, and they gave up a lot of points. Indianapolis, when they were healthy, they gave up a ton of points. So this is a situation where the Browns are not healthy in either line, offensively or defensively. Myles Garrett is, but the other players around him aren't. Getting Denzel Ward back helps, right? They're going to have some really good corner people. They'll be able to play some man-to-man with their Newsome and Denzel Ward and Emerson Jr. They can cover, and does Houston have the receivers? But for some reason, they don't play as well defensively on the road as they have, and that's why this is very meaningful.
With the Commanders and Jets, we got two really bad teams going head to head. The Jets, despite getting shut out 30-0 against Miami, are a 3-point home favorite in this spot against Washington. But with games like these, sometimes if you don't feel comfortable with the spread, you want to have a little fun in the prop betting market, see what options there are. And one bet that's been pretty interesting is the first to 10. A lot of people like betting this one. The Jets have failed to be the first to 10 points in 22 of their last 23
games. Bring them all back, though, Storm. Bring them all back. Why not? Everybody come back. Why not have a party? Sure.
Because they're doing
so well.
We can't
do anything on the field, but I think everybody should come back. Okay, continue.
Okay, but that's the trend. They have not been able to reach 10 points first in a game in 22 of their last 23 games. Is that meaningful or meaningless? The bet this week, Commanders first to 10, would be plus money, plus 115.
I would never bet on the Commanders offense, period. They can't block anybody. I mean, they just throw it all over the lot. You're not getting me to bet the Jets either. I told you this is my Hall & Oates play. I don't even have to. It's like there's
no,
just
even
I,
props,
I don't care
just
where
stay
this
away
line
from
goes.
This game. Just stay away.
I have no interest in this game, and I don't even know if it's going to be bad weather. But it would only be fitting for this game to be played in the pouring rain, right? It would only be fitting. And so, you know, look, the Jets. How can't this be meaningful? You know, one of the things you do all week when you're working these long hours in the NFL is you're trying to get a game plan where you start the game off fast. Everybody talks about starting fast. Well, that's in the game plan. You know, we're going to formation this. They're going to think we're going to do that. We'll do this. Blah, 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 and now we're going to get points. And usually even bad teams score first. I mean, look, the Arizona Cardinals went up 7-0 against the 49ers. Remember?
Yep.
Right? Even bad teams can score first. They just can't maintain the game plan for 4 quarters. The Jets can't even score first. But it's okay. It's okay. Let's come back.
That just made my day. Even bad teams can do this. The Jets can't even do it. It's crazy.
They can't even do it.
Dead on.
But we're going to bring them all back. Let's bring them all back.
Let's run it back, because Aaron Rodgers is such a great GM. That worked out for him masterfully in Green Bay, and now it's going to transpire. It's just, it's crazy. We talk about, I love the comparison that you gave earlier with LeBron, and we see this with players all the time trying to pick their team and act like they know better than everybody else. it never works out. I don't know why people that are in the positions to make those decisions allow that to happen below
them. And the fans think it's great. That's the thing that's unbelievable. The fans think it's great because they love the player, and they can't separate the player from the procedure. It's the same thing. Everybody, you know, is giving me crap about Montez Sweat. Look, Montez Sweat, I never said he wasn't a good player. What they gave up in terms of money and draft capital was my issue, and it's still my issue today. I don't care how many sacks he gets. He's a good player. But they gave up a great pick for a player that they could sign had they paid him that contract 4 months from now. Like, that to me wasn't smart, and it's still not smart. It has nothing to do with the player. It's the same thing. Aaron Rodgers is a great player, but he can't run the team. And here's what happens to your team. If you let Aaron run the team, what does that tell everybody else on the team?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. It doesn't let you know who your leader is. And Robert Saleh clearly is not the guy that, at least in my opinion, from the outside looking in, I'm obviously not inside the building, but it doesn't seem like he's the leader that the Jets thought that they were getting in him. Aaron Rodgers is running the shots. So it's a different feel. I got one more for you here, because we talk about, you know, an offense that's been terrible. The Raiders offense, boy, did they turn it around this past week. They are in Kansas City taking on the Chiefs this week. And Kansas City, despite having a pretty dominant win on paper against the Patriots, still didn't look that great. The underdog has covered in 6 of the last 7 Chiefs games. The Raiders, a 10-point dog in this spot, meaningful or meaning less?
I think it's meaningful. Look, the Raiders went up 14-0 in the first game in Las Vegas. Now, they got outscored 31-3 over the remaining three quarters, but I think the Raiders have a lot more confidence going in the game. They've been playing better defensively. Look, Mahomes is still great, and the loose plays give you all sorts of trouble. But the one thing you know playing them, Kelsey's not going to beat you one-on-one. I mean, you watch the Raider tape. And the Raiders, you watch the Patriot tape. The Patriots treated him like a good tight end. They had a guy covering him, and he covered him. Now, Mahomes got out of the pocket. He made some plays, as he always does, and they made some throws down the field. But for the most part, that offense never looked in rhythm. Now, here's the key, and here's what I would caution people this week, betting Raiders. Pacheco's back. They need Pacheco. They need that power run game. They need that kind of toughness, which helps, because this offensive line for Kansas City, it hasn't gone from being, it was good last year, I would say border on average, good to average. This year, it's from average to well below average.
Yeah, Pacheco makes a huge difference, especially when you think about the receivers and the drops and the liability that Kadarius Toney is. That game is what's going to kick us off on Christmas Day. We have Raiders, Chiefs, Giants, Eagles, and then the nightcap, the 2-1 seeds, Baltimore and San Francisco, to close out our Christmas night. So we get 2 lumps of coal, and then we get a real gift to close out the night. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The holidays are here, and Omaha Steaks is here to help take the guesswork out of your gifting this season. Shop carefully curated gift packages that are guaranteed to make spirits bright all winter long. Head to omahasteaks.com. You'll save 50% off site-wide. Plus, when you use our promo code VSiN at checkout, get an additional $30 off your order. Send tender, juicy butcher's cut filet, mouth-watering burgers, gourmet jumbo franks, or even easy-to-prep meals that are ready in a flash with Omaha Steaks. The possibilities are endless. Again, it's omahasteaks.com. 50% off site-wide, and you save an additional $30 when you use our promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N. Omaha Steaks, a gift from the heart, minimum order may be required. Let's turn the page, shift a little bit from the NFL to college football here for a bit, alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you, as we welcome in Aaron Moore, VSiN.com writer, college football analyst, sports media professor, all the things. Aaron, as we welcome you in, please tell me you did not lay the 2.5 with ODU yesterday. Please tell me you weren't on that side.
You know what, Stormy? I did not bet that game, and it was a very interesting situation. I'm at the gym in the afternoon, and I'm watching the game, watching it go back and forth, understand the spread. And from a psychological standpoint, when you don't have a bet on a game and you can watch it and you can understand how all these factors go into it, it's kind of a cathartic situation to be able to watch a football game and enjoy it and not bet on it. So I had fun watching it. Thankfully, I wasn't on the wrong side there.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, so let's start off with Alabama. You've got a bunch of college football plays on the look-ahead lines. Alabama, well, wait a minute. I got you, Alabama, Washington. What were we doing here now? Washington, Michigan -3 versus Texas. Do you think that game could happen?
Well, I'm looking at it this way, Michael. If you look at the look-ahead in the futures board in college football, you've got these lines that are, or at least the odds, are pretty close. You've got Michigan about +195 to win it, Alabama +205 in that ballpark. So I'm looking ahead and not playing the futures board. I'm looking at look-ahead lines. So I like Alabama against Michigan. I have Alabama so far +2. I see the championship game being Alabama versus Texas. And right now, in that look-ahead line, it's Alabama -2.5. If that game happens, I think you're going to see a lot of popularity in Alabama. It's going to be Nick Saban with revenge, Nick Saban having this time to prepare. So if that championship game is Alabama -2.5 against Texas, I took it already because I think that line will go up past 3, and that's obviously a key number. And looking at it from a futures board standpoint, if Alabama doesn't play Texas, if that game doesn't happen, my bet is voided. So I like that option rather than playing one of those four teams to win it all, especially if you're getting Michigan and Alabama 2-1. It's just not a great payout. And I think it's interesting looking at the futures board. I'm sure I'm one of many. I like Alabama to beat Michigan, but there's still a reason the odds makers have Alabama listed as the favorite. So I see playing that Alabama Texas game as a look ahead as a little bit of an insurance policy. If it doesn't happen, then I'll get that bet voided.
Yeah, that's a really cool perspective. The DraftKings Sportsbook is offering that it will get voided if that game ultimately doesn't get played, and just a unique way to approach the market on the look ahead. I love that. Let's look to games that are happening for sure. We know that, especially coming up later on today, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 Eastern on ESPN. We've got Marshall and UTSA going head to head. Marshall, I know they've gotten hit pretty hard from the transfer portal. The Roadrunners laying 10.5 now, has gone down though from 11.5, total 51.5. How are you approaching it?
I think, Stormy, this is a good example, like we talked about last week, that obviously motivation has to be a big part of your bowl handicap. And it's not just laying the side in the case of the favorite. This way, I'm taking the under. I've got the under 51.5, and I got the worst number here. It opened at 55, so I definitely didn't get the good number here. But you look at it from a motivational standpoint. UTSA is playing close to home in Frisco. Jeff Traylor, their very good coach, is 0-3 in bowl games. There's clearly the motivation for UTSA. Marshall with all the opt-outs, Cole Pennington, Chad Sun is playing quarterback. So you look at all these factors, I don't want to lay 10.5. So my logic is, from a handicapping standpoint, I think UTSA will do what they have to do to win. And if that's the case, they're going to play their game. Well, what is their game? They like to run, and they like to have a good, solid defense. So if that's the case, hopefully for me, it keeps it under that 51.5. And certainly for the people that got it at 55 at that opening line, that's a fantastic number. So I look at it this way. If you like UTSA, they should play their game, and their game would be running and defense, and that hopefully would keep it under the 51.5.
Syracuse has a new coach, but they're also playing USF, and you also like this game to go under.
Yeah, Michael, this is interesting. This line opened the total of 62. It's now 57. I got that immediately when I took the under 62. And from a handicapping standpoint, it was kind of interesting. I did my numbers. I looked at it. Immediately, my number became lower. And I jumped on the 62. I didn't do any of the deeper analysis that I normally do because my number said 62 was too high. Now you look at it and you can see why it's gotten down to 57. You have Syracuse with an interim head coach, Garrett Schrader. Their quarterback isn't going to play. And similar to what I was just saying about UTSA in the under, that Syracuse and South Florida want to run the ball. And you have a game here of the epitome of mediocrity. I don't think it becomes a shootout. I think it becomes two teams playing in a bowl game, two teams that are going to have a lot of players not be there next year. So I like the idea of taking the under here. And 57 is still a decent number to look at. I think you're going to see running, and you never know in the Boca Raton Bowl. You never know in Florida with the weather, perhaps the wind and the rain pick up, and that obviously could impact the game as well. So the 62 I really like, and the 57 I think is still playable.
If there is rain, maybe their sponsor can help them, the roofclaim.com Boca Raton Bowl. Another game worth discussing this week, certainly coming up this Saturday right here in Vegas at Allegiant Stadium. Got Utah and Northwestern going head-to-head in the Las Vegas Bowl on ABC. It appears Bryson Barnes, despite entering the transfer portal, the pig farmer himself, will still go ahead and start for the Utes in this one. They're laying what was 7.5, now 6.5 in this game. Is Northwestern maybe getting a little bit disrespected in this spot, given some of the players that aren't going to be available for Utah? And Northwestern, one of the best stories in all of college football this year, what they've done to be in a bowl game.
Stormy, absolutely. Motivational standpoint, Utah, used to playing in championship-level games, is not. And it's great that they can go to Las Vegas, but it's not a championship-level game. Northwestern, no one expected them to be there. Certainly not me. I bet they're total under this year and was absolutely surprised. So I think from a motivational standpoint, that 6.5 is out there for Northwestern. I think it is disrespect. And this is a situation where if you want to play the motivation angle, clearly Northwestern is going to be motivated more. This could really top off their season. And in Utah, this is a much different December game that they've played in the last 2 years. So I think from a motivational standpoint, you really have to look at Northwestern taking that 6.5 points.
How about San Jose State, Coastal Carolina? What's your thoughts on this one?
So this one, Michael, is interesting. You got both teams at 7-5. I haven't played this one yet because I think the line is just a little too high. It's 10.5 San Jose State. They're the team. This is the side that you think is going to win here because Coastal Carolina has everybody opting out. Even opt-outs are opting out of this game. So I really see it as motivation, everything on San Jose State side. Still 10.5 points is a lot to lay. So what I'm going to do with this one is wait closer to game time and look at it from a motivational standpoint, but a little bit different. You're in Hawaii, and San Jose State's quarterback, Chevin Cordero, is from Hawaii. So I'm going to look to see and play his player props when they're posted by DraftKings, usually about the night before the game they're posted. Motivation is clearly on Cordero's side. He's going back to Hawaii, and I'm going into it thinking that he's going to play the whole game. He's going to look to use this as a showcase. And when those props are posted, keep in mind, Cordero averages 212.4 passing yards a game and 17 completions. So if those player props for Cordero are somewhere in that ballpark, I'm going to play him in his player props probably over. And the motivation isn't going to be on my betting standpoint, isn't going to be betting the motivation of San Jose State. It's going to be betting the motivation of their quarterback, who is Hawaiian, and he's playing his final game back in his home state.
I love that, Aaron. Thank you so much for the time, as always. You're awesome.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks very much, guys. Thank you. Good luck to you.
I love the approach of Cordero's motivation, but I saw the video from San Jose State and their head coach, Brent Brennan, when they found out they were going to be in the Hawaii Bowl. He announced it to the team, busting into their team room with a swimsuit on and a surfboard. Like, they're excited about this, too. They didn't get the opportunity to play in the Mountain West Championship game. The computers were against them. They want to end the year on a high note. And I saw Coastal Carolina in person, their regular season finale against JMU without Grayson McCall. It was not good. McCall, by the way, your newest NC State Wolfpack member. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Want to check out VSiN's betting splits but don't have a VSiN Pro subscription yet? No problem. This week only, we're giving everybody access to our betting splits page for free. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action, find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets, and where the money doesn't match that public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Free access to our VSiN betting splits all week long at VSiN.com/splits. That's VSIN.com/splits. We are wrapping things up on this Tuesday edition of the Lombardi Line. Michael Lombardi and Stormy Bonantoni with you. And we had some news that came down yesterday while we were on the air, Michael, about Steelers safety DeMonte Casey, who's been suspended now for the rest of the season following that hit that knocked Colts receiver Michael Pittman out of Saturday's game. And the VP of football operations for the NFL, John Runyon, in a press release yesterday of the penalty, said when players violate the rules intended to protect player safety on a repeated basis, and particularly when violations carry with them a significant injury risk to an opposing player, it's appropriate to impose substantially greater penalties. He has had 5 penalties on the year. But his agent has come out and said that the majority of those have been reduced and the fines, you know, being reduced and taken away. What did you think of the repercussions that KZ had for the hit?
Well, I think the league is kind of working on two problems. They're trying to control these helmet-to-helmet hits, but they're also doing nothing to teach tackling. Like, they limit the amount of practice time, and you can't have so teams have to practice without any contact and without any tackling, and it's very challenging. And what happens is the game moves so fast, and I don't think it's intentional. I really don't. I don't think, you know, Kareem Jackson's hits were intentional in Denver. It just, this is kind of how they've trained themselves how to tackle, and unfortunately it's the wrong way to tackle. So I think the league's got to try to, I mean, it's one thing fining players, suspending players. That doesn't solve the problem. Right. The answer here is to solve the problem, is to get tackling at a higher level. How we do that, you know, Buddy Tevens, the former New Hampshire, the Dartmouth head coach who passed away from a tragic car accident, a bicycle accident as he was riding his bike, he first introduced this whole concept of no contact tackling, which is basically using dummies, and he did it up at Dartmouth. And it seems to work, and I think that's where the league needs to really point its emphasis. But if you're not giving coaches time to practice, how are you giving them time to work on tackling?
Yeah, and I know this is one guy, and he's a repeat offender, but it does bring about the larger conversation, as you referenced, the coaching aspect of it, and how important that is for these defensive players to be taught the right way, especially with the way that the league has put an added emphasis on that. Now, Tom Brady also entered the chat. He saw the suspension on SportsCenter's Instagram, and he wrote a comment saying, quote, "Nobody likes seeing players get hurt, but hard hits happen. Quarterbacks should not be throwing the ball in areas where they're exposing their own teammates to these types of hits. Coaches need to coach better." So he talks about not only how you reference the tackling aspect of it, but from a quarterback perspective, coaches need to coach these quarterbacks better to not put their receivers in a bad spot to have those types of hits happen.
I couldn't agree more. Look, if you're playing for Brady and your back is to the defense, okay, where he throws you the football, if he throws it to this side, he wants you to turn that way and run. If he throws it over here, he wants you to turn that way and run. He's leading you away from contact. If he's throwing it over here, he knows somebody's coming to hit you. That's part of the nuances of the game. That's game management. That's game strategy. That's the areas where you have to be really proficient at. And Tom is right. We have gotten too many play designers and not enough people that are running the plays the best way to utilize the skill. And then our quarterbacks are not accurate. I mean, it's hard enough to get the ball onto the receiver, let alone get it in a location. The accuracy matters. You know, Josh Allen gets away with sometimes losing the strike zone because he can make plays that nobody else can make. But the great ones, as I've said many times, they throw the ball through the keyhole. They make such great throws, it's hard not to catch, and they keep their receivers safe.
Well, in this instance, it's Gardner Minshew, right, who is, while he's a veteran, still a second-string quarterback in the organization, and we see those up and down the NFL right now because of all of the quarterback injuries we've had. So do you think that this is an issue of, like, the great quarterbacks, the guys who are meant to be in this position probably do a little bit of a better job of it, but our quarterback play this year specifically, because of the options we have ahead of us, maybe not as strong in those areas?
Well, but I think what Brady's also talking about is coaching the details, right? I think that's what he's really talking about. He's talking about coaching details. He's talking about detailed coaching, and that's what we don't have. We have a bunch of guys. We have a lot of inexperienced coaches calling plays that haven't done it before. I mean, there's a lot of first-time coordinators, 1 or 2 year coordinators. It's a hard job. It's a hard job to get everything in on time, let alone coach the details. You know, and so that becomes an issue. And I think that's what he's really referring to. It's like I talk about all the time. When you get a really good coordinator, a guy who understands how to attack an offense, like Schwartz understood how to attack Chicago, like Brian Flores understood how to attack Las Vegas, it's a whole different kind of game, you know, and they're playing at a different game. And if you can't adjust to that game, it becomes a real issue. It becomes a real issue. And you want your coordinator, like last night, what you want out of your defensive coordinator is they have the ball first and 10 at their own 8-yard line. They got to go 92. You're looking for a great call, a sack, you know, a negative play so that they get well behind the down and distance so you can win the game there. We always talk about the great play call by the offensive coach. We never talk about the great play call by the defensive coach. And we need that too.
So obviously the NFL offseason program like is scheduled out the way that it is for a reason. Do you foresee at all because the last couple of years with the way that tackling has been and like the amount of flags that are being thrown and guys getting kicked out of games and suspended for different types of hits that they have, do you anticipate at all that there will be any sort of changes to that to offer coaches more of an opportunity to fine tune some of these details? Or is this the schedule is what it is for a reason and that's how it's going to stay?
It is what it is. Yeah. And unfortunately, the teams that suffer are these teams that have to play. Look, Bill Callahan does a really good job with the offensive line in Cleveland, and he's had to play 5 backups. It's hard to keep your quarterback healthy when you have 5 backups that you really haven't had time to train and coach. You know, one of the things that made Dallas so good, they kept that they're able to keep that line together. What Denver's offensive line has played almost every single snap this year together as one. So they're able to stay and they can get better and better and they work together and their communication. You know, you can watch a play last night where the receiver is trying to communicate to the slot receiver in Philadelphia and they're not communicating. It's loud. The guy doesn't get the hand signals. There's not a communication or a check off that you got it from the quarterback. And next thing you know, Hurts throws a deep ball interception and the other receiver never left the field. He never left the stance because he didn't know what route to run. So there's those kind of things that happen during a game that become problematic.
Which backup quarterback, and I know I'm putting you on the spot, which backup quarterback do you think has the best chance to win a playoff game this year? Like Browning, could he win a playoff game?
I think Will Hill's right. I think Browning's played really well. What does Browning bring to the table? He's very accurate with the football. He does a tremendous job of putting the ball in a lot of spots, and he kind of bails Zach Taylor out at sometimes. So I definitely think he could. Look, Flacco could win a playoff game. He's done it before. I don't know if Gardner Minshew could. I don't know if Gardner Minshew could, but I think, you know, it depends on the matchup. I don't know if Nick Mullen could. I think Nick Mullen is always on the cusp.
They're in that 6th spot right now. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, he's always on the cusp of can he win one or can he not? I think that's the issue there. So, look, it's not always just about the backup. You got to play complementary football to the team, and you've got to be able to handle it and not make the big mistake, but also not turn down the profits. Last night, we saw Jalen Hurts turn down the profit. He had chances to make some throws that he decided to go down the field with. When they weren't throwing it, they couldn't make a play down the field. See, people start to get a read on you, right? So everybody knows that if it's drop back 3rd and 8, people are going to pressure him a little bit where it gets him to look around and all of a sudden he's taking off and running.
Well, yeah, and you talk about taking the profits. I know there were a number of instances throughout the game, but the one that just sticks out so much to me is at the very end of the game when you have an opportunity to play for overtime, you take the deep shot downfield when you don't need to and you have 2 timeouts. Like, that's what's mind-boggling to me about that end of game.
I couldn't agree more, Stormy. And I think that comes to, we talk about situational football, but that's a situation. You know, 3rd and 8, you can't throw a 9 route down the field in that situation. You need the first down. You know, I mean, if you complete it, it's all right. But sometimes when you don't complete it, it shows up worse. I think situationally that there's a lot of teams that could do better in that area.
I'm really worried about the Eagles when playoff time gets here.
You should be. They're going to have to figure out a way to get their quarterback to play better and their offense to play better. Right now, they don't have an identity.
you're going to have a really tough time when you're on all those Philly local radio stations and they're asking
hard.
You
because oh don't God.
They you always say they tee you up to be like, okay, so we're going to win the Super Bowl.
Just tell me we're going to win. Just tell me we're going to win. That's all they care about. Just tell me we're going to win.
Oh, great stuff as always, Michael. That's a wrap for us today on the Lombardi Line. Make sure you come back with us tomorrow, same time, same place. If you're sticking right here on VSiN, you're going to get Sharp Money coming up next. If you're watching on DraftKings Network, it's Pablo Torre. Have a great day. Good luck with your bets.